fire in the smoke and the fire. Tightrope on a wire. I see you broken and tired, and all your hope is expired. You're just done.
This is the game. Will Smith song.
The world
is insane. All the pain from the
not it. From the pain and the flames and the things.
When the flames and the flames, then I watch with my main.
Again, it's Kirk Franklin's on here, so be careful because God is listening.
Yeah.
So many tests for the flesh.
Careful. Don't go at it too hard.
Yeah, this is
God strike you down and leave a better.
Get my guy, what's his name, Lecrae on there?
No, Kirk is.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. Where was God when you walked up on that stage, Will? Where was God in that moment?
You're not going to let him get past that, something he's apologized for. He's never going to live that down to you.
Bro.
Right. All men can't fall short.
Nah, man.
Not in your eyes.
This song needed Shaboozy on it to be actually a hit. There's no doubt about it.
I mean, again, I told my wife, it's going to get played at some churches. It is, and we're going to lift our hands because it's about the spirit and about getting through adversity. You understand what I'm saying?
Yep.
But it will not be a hit.
No, I mean...
Not like mainstream, like he's used to.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, so anyway...
Appreciate you playing that, Brett.
Yeah, that was...
Again, we have talked about the two worst performances at the BET Awards. Haven't talked about the top at all.
Ice Spice.
John prefers to talk about the bad.
Ice Spice.
Did you see Sexy Red at that thing?
I did not.
Glow was at that thing. You know, it really was a night of... Again, it just feels like a women's renaissance going on.
Yeah.
All the performances felt like it was women. Meg Thee Stallion opened it up. You know, and then performed with Glow. Women were well represented at the BET Awards. And here you are talking about the two, you know, the two men that performed.
Yeah, what about Ice Spice? Was that a good or bad performance?
Ice Spice?
Yeah.
Can't talk about it.
Why?
I don't know.
You tell Trista you love her all the time on the show. You can't talk about careful. Ice Spice?
Yeah.
First of all, that's a misrepresentation.
Well, you say every time she gets on the phone, love
you. Did I say it the last time, or did you say it?
I don't know. I don't remember, dude.
You did. No need to get bashful.
So
and you
saying,
said it very happily.
No, I mean, why can't you talk about Ice Spice?
Her performance.
It was a great. It was a tribute. It was a tribute, bro. To dance.
It was intense.
Yeah,
and again, I thought about, I'm not even going to lie to you, I'm not going to do it because it's not appropriate, but I thought about giving a respect burger to Tail. Because Tail was on display last night all through the awards. And, you know, some of the women were concerned about, well, all of them were twerking.
Oh, yeah.
And some were less concerned because you know what happens when you twerk? Things ride up. And some were less concerned. And I swear to you this, and maybe this is just an observation, but two, three, 4 years ago, it felt like BET and other award shows had moved away. You would sort of get the cut. You would get the cutaway when performers were twerking or whatever else.
Yeah.
Last night, there was the focus, exactly, Brad. Brad's pointing his
finger.
And I don't know if Meg and some of the songs have done that to where now this is part of what we're doing, so we don't want you to cut away, but they were cutting onto the Tail, and the Tail was shaking. And a lot of people said this. This isn't just my observation, but that was, we're talking about, you know, culture's biggest, it was like ass's biggest night because it was on display all night long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was killing it.
She took it to a different level with what, you know, with her performance.
She has real aura. I mean, I'm just looking at the, I'm watching
and,
the performance.
And I'm so glad that's too. Why we're doing Respect Burger, because I'm glad we started like this, because I'm going to give my Respect Burger to someone from the BET Awards that did something a little bit different.
Mm.
But yes, that was the theme to me last night. It was on, even Glow was doing that. Glow was, you know, doing her, showing she got a little something. And it feels like all of them feel like they have to. So then it gets us to the conversation of what are we doing here? You know, are we, is it music? Is it, what are we, and it felt like, does everybody feel like they have to do, you know, shake a tail feather to sell a record? You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not a new conversation, but that's literally was in every performance last night. Not to mention the Usher tribute. Most of the women that sang, most of the people that sang her songs, they were women. And so it was really a night of women and women's choices last night. And their choice in a lot of cases was to shake that tail.
So wait, she's beefing with Lotto?
Which one?
I
can't keep up with all their beefs. Even whatchacallit's beefing with Nicki Minaj right now. Meg Thee Stallion. Did you know that? It is definitely a renaissance going on in women's rap, because it used to just be Nicki Minaj and there were no other women's rappers in the category. Now we're flooded. We're inundated by them. And let me tell you this, Glow is holding her own. She was right there front row with Gotti. I don't think she won anything last night, but her performance was good. But again, she felt like she had to turn around, shake that thing.
Yeah, I'm appalled.
Dude, it was on, and that was the theme last night.
I'm appalled by
until we got to someone specifically that I'm gonna mention here in respect where it was on display, bro.
Yeah, I'm so appalled.
They're not scared to shake it.
I think we deserve an encore. I'm just appalled.
That's what I'm saying. You come in here talking about Shaboozy today. Like, there were a lot of other storylines out of last night, and Shaboozy down on the list. And others are telling me, John, he's got 2-3 other albums, very successful. So you poured some hate on the wrong one. Okay?
Yeah, we'll catch him at the honky-tonk a little bit later today. Isn't it time for Respect
yes,
Burgers?
Let's go. It is. It's that time. Every Monday around this time, I get on the Big Green Egg. I pat out some burgers like I used to do at the Memphis Country Club. I season these a little differently, though. I put respect on them in a world full of disrespect. Let's do Respect Burgers.
Now, it's time for the Jason and John Show, Respect Burgers.
R-E-S-E-C-T, find out what it means to me.
Sizzling Respect Burgers, served hot and fresh from Jason and John.
All right, John's going to like the first one. We're going to get off a tail here for a second. We will get back to the BET Awards and something I really, really liked out of them. But we're going to start it off with a big burger for a big man. It's going to Zach Edey, not just for being the stud that he is, and let John tell he's going to come up here and here and be an all-star from day one, but it's the fact that he surprised us a little bit. I think in talking with Drew Hill, the Grizzlies beat writer for the Daily Memphian last week, when he was on our show on Thursdays, and always appreciate his time, I think we sort of came away with that, thinking, well, there's an opportunity for him to play for his country here. And so you'd figure with training camp starting up, he's going to take that route, and we liked it, frankly. Whether he's going to play more, because he didn't play much when they played for Canada and FIBA, or not, we liked the training camp environment like we talked about. You'll be around some Jamal Murrays and the SGAs for every Dylan Brooks you'll be around. That's a good thing for him. We kind of written it off. At that point last week, it sort of written off the idea of summer league. What do you need it for anyway? It's just a bunch of guys going out and trying to prove something against a guy we know and is proven, certainly from the college sense, but going to be you figure a starter and an impact guy for you next year. The reason I'm giving them the respect burger is because of what the quote that John read to you earlier. He said, I've made the difficult decision of pulling myself out of the process to compete for a spot at the Paris 2024 Olympic Games with Canada. Since last summer, I've been training and competing nonstop to achieve my goals of winning a national championship at Purdue and making it to the NBA. I have a duty now to prepare for all that is coming my way with being drafted by the Memphis Grizzlies. The work I put in this summer on my body and my game is critical for me to be the best version of myself. Thank you to Canada Basketball and all of the fans for your support and understanding. How could you not respect this level of commitment from Zach Edey, who, I think I'm asking fair questions of John when we talk about his, that body holding up and everything else, but what you cannot debate is this is a guy who has put himself, worked himself into the stud that he is, 2-time National Player of the Year, and here he is passing up on an opportunity to represent his country to get himself ready for what? For his job, for what he's being paid professionally to do right now, and that is to be a contributor for the Memphis Grizzlies. And so, again, you cannot do anything but respect this decision. How much he gets out of summer league, it'll be more about just sort of picking up what the Grizzlies do, being around the Grizzlies in terms of young players, being around their coaching staff, that kind of thing. We know summer league starts July 8th in Salt Lake City. The Grizzlies will do 3 there before they go out to Las Vegas. Don't have an idea yet of how much, if at all, we're going to see Zach Edey, but you figure he's not making the decision to not play for Canada if he's not going to get a little bit of run in summer league. But respect burger to him for the commitment shown so far to his main job, the Memphis Grizzlies. Moving on. It's just for what the Philadelphia 76ers are doing, namely paying Tyrese Maxey, Brad's guy. And I always go back to that because Brad was the guy that was highest on him, the highest on him, the earliest as it came to around us from this show. But Tyrese Maxey gets a 5-year, $205 million maximum deal to go with them bringing over Paul George, obviously from the Clippers, on a max deal. What was that? 4 years, $212 million max contract for him. John and I mentioned it. We even like the moves. And Morey's got more work to do because he doesn't have much of a roster right now. We like what they're doing around the edges. They did bring back Kelly Oubre on a 2-year deal. They've added Andre Drummond on a very cheap 2-year, $10 million deal that I would have loved to, frankly, have seen with the Grizzlies. Set that to the side. And then Eric Gordon is going to be back on a 1-year, or be there on a 1-year league minimum. So you're working around the sides where you can. Obviously, don't have a you know, now that you pay Paul George, you don't have a ton to work with there. But the days of Tobias Harris being a useless 3-4 you are over. That's three All-Stars right at the top, and we've discussed it. I think it moves them past the Knicks, because as much as I like Mikal Bridges and OG Anunoby, especially defensively on the same squad, those guys, these are All-Stars that Philly's throwing at you with their top three guys. And Paul George is a heck of an upgrade from Tobias Harris. So it's really just what Philly's doing. And, again, that big three of the East, and we'll see if Milwaukee can make it a big four. But that big three from the East of Boston, the Knicks, and Philadelphia should be a lot of fun to watch next year as it plays. And I guess you got to give Paul George some credit, although I've never looked at him as a guy that's going to get you over the hump. You know, Paul George leaving home. You know, he's leaving the West Coast to go get at least a little bit uncomfortable on the East Coast. Not that he hadn't been there. He's a Pacer for a long time. But you're leaving home to go out and, I suppose, here, try to, you know, the mission is to win a championship. You didn't just get paid. You're going here to try to win a title. Just got to give him a little bit of credit for that. Stop tying your wagon to the Clippers and, more importantly, Kawhi Leonard, because that wagon's done moving. All right, moving on. It's another team that we've discussed, and one that I love what they're doing. We discussed it. Yes, the Thunder overpaid for Isaiah Hartenstein. 3 years, $87 million is way more than he's worth, but they can afford to do it. It's sort of like, it's sort of like the Grizzlies drafting Zach Edey at 9. Other people will look at that and say, you overpaid. He shouldn't have gone 9, but it's the perfect fit for the Grizzlies. And again, you have to take context into consideration here. OKC's paying everybody on rookie deals. They got all the cap money. They got draft picks. They got it all. And so they can afford to spend on an Isaiah Hartenstein who takes this 3-year, $87 million deal over a 4-year, $72.5 million deal that he could have had to return to the Knicks. So he gets the money. He goes to the team that was number one in the West last year, and it's a fantastic fit. Also pairing it with what they've done in terms of shipping Josh Giddey, who they could not play this postseason, out, and bringing in a Caruso who can and gives you some stickiness defensively in terms of adding to what you got to do there. OKC desperately needed to get a big in there. We had talked about it. Holmgren, who is not really that, right, was getting banged around in there by Dallas and others. And so you have got to do something. They didn't go out and get an Isaiah Hartenstein, who you can argue this dude. I mean, 2 years, $16 million was the deal that he signed with the Knicks in 2022. Clearly outplayed it. But to go from that to what he's got now, just no one would have predicted it. But definitely like what Philly has done. And I think you have to respect certainly what OKC has done. All right, moving back to last night real quick. And maybe this to sort of, we start our conversation with how much twerking and tail shaking was a part of last night's festivities at the BET Awards. And listen, that's where we're at with music right now. I'm not going to, I could sit up here and go, oh, do we need? But what you saw towards the end of the BET Music Awards, for those that stayed in it, was, and I wish I'd gone out and saw it when she was here. But Lauryn Hill, former Fugees member, obviously, who is back out and performing now, had some voice issues back in the day. What did it? 3 months in prison, some taxes. She's back and performing. We know that because she was here in Memphis here recently, a couple of months ago. And again, I wish I'd gotten out to see her. I think it was her first performance of 2024 at the time. Last night, she comes out with her son, YG Marley, whose music I wasn't as familiar with, but obviously with that last name, you know what's up. And YG Marley, the son of Lauryn Hill, is also the grandson of Bob Marley. Okay, and so you're talking, how about that? You are the grandson of Bob Marley and the son of Lauryn Hill. So in terms of your musical roots and how deep they run, really, really impressive. You talk about pedigree and everything else. But their performance last night, they did a couple of things. She did a Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, heartfelt rendition of that. Title track of her 1998 album. But then she did his music a little bit later on, and I had missed it. They'd done the performance, a similar one, on The Tonight Show. Dude, it was fantastic. His songs, Praise John, The Moonlight, Mom Was Dancing, Son's Out There Dancing. And here's my thing. Lauryn Hill was, and anybody knows this about Lauryn Hill, knows she's never done, she's never sold that in her music. It's never been about sex. She's totally dressed up almost where you can't even see her neck, covered up completely. And what were we into the performance for? We were in it for the music. Right. She was entertaining us without having to dance or anything else. Her son comes on, and then you really get into how deep the music goes with the reggae influence and everything else of his grandfather and everything else. But my point was, this was more entertaining, I'll be honest with you, than the rap acts had been. And here's a deal where you're not showing any skin. And it was great. It was so refreshing to see. And listen, I mean, I'm still a man. You know what I'm saying? So it's not like I don't know what's up there. And it's not like I didn't have my eyes on some of it at one point. But as I get older, I feel like, you know what I'm saying? As I get older in my life and start to realize, man, I don't even know who these young girls are anymore. Oh, this is out of my league. I can't tell you how much I appreciate just the music itself. And when you can still do that and be successful. And so for me, my education on her son in terms of YG and learning about his music. And last night I'm sitting up there playing his new song to Lauren being back and showing women in music. You don't have to do it that way. Obviously, it's different genres and rap music and women are here to stay. And listen, they're making their money. But it was so refreshing to see such a beautiful performance by Lauryn Hill. I told my wife I hated that we missed her when she came to Memphis for that. And then finally, final respect, Burger. It's and really because I gave Shelby County Sheriff's Department a little bit of hell for what I thought was filling out quotas in terms of getting me at the stop sign a little while back. I want to tell you about an incident that happened to me this morning. There was a wreck. Right there, off Appling, right there where you're getting on to 40, getting on to the exit. We're taking my wife to work, you know we're down to one car. Wreck, you can't get on. So I head on down to Reese Road and bust a left. We're going to go downstage and take the long way on into Fraser where my wife works. And I hit Reese, and because I'm mad I couldn't get on the expressway, I hit that gas. And I'm going 59 in a 40 or a 45 before I know it. And before I know it, I'm passing, Brad, a motorcycle cop. Shelby County Sheriff's deputy on a motorcycle. And just as soon as I realized that I passed him, he's hitting the lights. He's coming on in behind me. Okay, so he pulls me over facing the car. I'm already pulling the wallet out and the license. I'm like, here we go again. Another ticket. And this one I really earned. Damn. Because old boy was going 59 trying to get Faith to work. And again, it's Monday and everything else. The brother comes to the car. He asked me, hey, man, you know you're doing 59. I said, I already know, man. Here's my license, everything else. He said, where are you going? I said, I'm trying to take my wife to work, brother. I'm just trying to get her there. Yeah, there was a wreck up there. He said, where do you work? She said, I teach. He's taking me over to my school. He says, have a nice day.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Good.
Look at you, Jason.
Good.
And I don't know this brother's descent. What I know is he's one of my brown brothers. Again, I'm going to say Latino because I don't know if the brother's Mexican. I don't know what he is. But I should have gotten his name because that's kind of what, that sort of grace and mercy, I guess, I was looking for at the stop sign situation.
Absolutely.
And here's the, it's still out here.
It is out here.
It's still out here. Now, I don't know if it was because I had the beautiful wife in the car with the, she's ready, she's a teacher, like what it was. But when she told him that where she taught, my man said, have a nice day. It's the first time it's really ever happened to me in my life. I was so pleased. I just want to thank the Shelby County Sheriff's Department and the young brother that was on Reese on the motorcycle this morning that let a brother pass just trying to get his wife to work this morning.
That's beautiful.
There you go.
That's nice.
There you go.
Am I allowed to give a disrespect dog preemptively? Because I'd like to do it for U.S. soccer tonight for the situation that they are in. Now, are you up on this?
Yeah, because we were so poor. Was that on Friday?
Yes. Yes. Was it Panama?
And so now we're in a must-win situation against Uruguay?
Yes.
Uruguay?
Uruguay? Timothy Weah got a red card in the first 20 minutes of the match and got dismissed. And I think he's suspended for this one. So very, very awful lack of composure from him.
We have to be better.
The United States has to win to advance to the knockout stage tonight. I believe that is the case. They have to win. Uruguay's, I think, mostly in. Like they have a superior goal differential. So I think they maybe could afford, but I still believe they would love to send the United States home. That's the other thing. It's like there's just nothing as sweet as sending the United States home. And it just kind of feels like that's what's going to happen. It just sort of feels like to me that the United States is not going to get this win. I mean, this is not something that we particularly always play in, the Copa Americas, right? And we have sort of embarrassed ourselves once again. I feel like we have these new low moments every so often where we have, like, I can just picture, Clint Dempsey and Alexi, Lalas. Yeah, they're up there on the screen, and they're just like heads hanging low. Like, once again, another embarrassing moment for American soccer. And this would be that. This would absolutely not.
We're going to step up.
To not advance to the knockout stage in the Copas is pretty embarrassing. And I don't know what it is, man. I don't know. I guess it's just that we just don't really care about it as a nation. And so we don't invest in it. And we don't. It's sort of the conversation we always come back to.
I thought things were looking up.
We don't have much talent. We have Pulisic, and that's it. We have nobody else to speak of, really. That's, you know, we've had a few that have come through that we thought. Remember Julian Green? Julian Green was the youngest person to ever score a goal, at least for the United States, in the history of the World Cup. He was 19. Mm-hmm. And now he's 29, and he's not even playing for us anymore. You know, he didn't develop. You know, so we've had guys come through that we thought, all right, maybe it's them. Well, but it never materialized like that. And Pulisic actually has, but he just has nothing around him. So I expect them to lose tonight. My soccer people tell me the manager is just terrible, Berhalter.
Yeah, but they think I saw that on Sportsnet, he may still retain his gig.
If they lose
even
tonight.
Even though he's let us down, they think he may still retain it.
I don't know, bro.
You know, just sort of be on thin ice.
I don't know, bro. But at any rate.
I just saw the end of it, Pulisic trying to do everything. He doesn't have any help.
That's at 8 tonight in Kansas City. Will you be watching?
No.
What will you be doing instead?
8 to 9, probably be in a gym somewhere with Chris.
Oh, God, you got basketball tonight.
Yeah. Okay. Dude, we worked him so hard this weekend. Had him throwing up again.
Good. Abuse the kid.
Coach Adams.
I like
it. Yeah, we working him now.
Shout out, man.
We got to take it to the next level. We got to have the Zach Edey sort of commitment level.
That's right. You got to make sure that you abuse these kids, man. Make sure you don't.
Because here's the thing. You know how you talking about time earlier? You don't get any of it back.
That's right.
And what I don't want to do is look back and say, I was too easy on CJ.
Yeah.
That we didn't work out.
So make sure
when there
you
was
go
an opportunity
extra
to do it.
Hard on.
You understand what I'm saying?
Like,
so I may as well. I'm better off trying.
Todd Marinovich.
Just trying to be T. Moran or Todd Marinovich's dad.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you should.
I'm better off trying that because what I don't want to do is regret.
Yeah, man.
And then not have the time.
Exactly.
To go back.
That's right.
So we're going to push right now.
What you want to do is you want to make sure that. You know, you beat the enjoyment out of it for them. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like we want you to
just understand this is business now. You know, there's some things we got to get paid for. You know?
Exactly.
So understand, no more fun.
Yep.
No more games.
Yep. No more games. All right, we'll come back. Jason Fitz going to join us on the other side. Talk to him about the NBA draft and more on the other side. Stick around, Jason and John. How do you turn to FM? ESPN. Jason Fitz is a football host on Yahoo. Fox Sports Radio host, joins us every Monday, and he joins us now. Fitz, we do have breaking news just as we bring you on. Klay Thompson has made his choice. He will be headed to the Dallas Mavericks on a 3-year, $50 million deal. Before I ask you about that fit, his time with the Warriors and that run, that era, how will we remember it?
I think, so there's two different processes when you talk about memories for these things. How we should remember it is being an important part of one of the great dynasties of all time, right? Like that's the easy part of the memory of it. How will we remember him? Like Clay particularly will be the other guy in every one of these conversations. And that's not right or wrong. It just is what it is. Like in 30 years, when we talk about, you know, the greatest players of all time and the greatest teams of all time, Clay will be in that conversation with the teams, but he'll be the afterthought to much of that greatness. And it's not that Clay is not individually a superstar. It's just that Clay by himself was not the reason. Like, these were Steph's teams that won championships and then Steph and KD's teams that won championships and dominated. So, look, Clay's a great part of NBA history. But am I sitting here saying, oh, my God, Clay going to the Mavs changes the entire way that I see the West? No, like, this is one of those things, and I think we've seen this with Paul George, too, where we're infatuated like Tiger. Every time Tiger sits on a golf course, we sit here and talk about like Tiger's still who Tiger was. Like, guess what? Clay is not the guy that's suddenly going to make the Mavs better than the Celtics. He's just a really solid addition if he's healthy and plays well. And that's where we are at this point in his career.
Well, it felt like, too, if you were Golden State, like Steph is still playing, and you touched on it, he's still playing at an all-NBA level. And it's almost, and you've got him locked up, it's almost you owe it to him to try it again a different way, right? Rather than to just be playing out the string in a long rebuild. And so you could, and again, we'll see what moves can be made and what they got to do. But I don't think they could have done any of that just running back the old, you know, bringing back the Clay or Draymond. One of them had to go if Steph. It feels like to me if Steph was ever going to get any real chance of getting back into this in a West that's obviously moved on without them.
Yeah, and look, one of the most difficult things for franchises to do, I've seen all this. I was running this morning on the treadmill, and I saw the headline, you know, are the Warriors disrespecting Clay? Like, at some point, this is what we all forget as fans. It is the job of a team to look in the mirror and be honest with themselves.
Exactly.
And if your goal is to win a championship, Steph, Draymond, and Clay ain't doing that. Like, this is the same thing I've been yelling from the mountaintops about the Lakers. Like, I don't really care that they drafted Bronny, and J.J. Redick is what it is. Like, but this loyalty, LeBron, my only question there is, how's that winning you a championship? Because the only judge for certain franchises, the only way that you have success is lifting the Larry O.B. And there is no way in my mind that J.J., LeBron, and Bronny are putting them closer to turning around and winning a championship in L.A. You run it back with Clay and the Warriors, it feels good, but we're not in the feel-good business. Like, the Warriors are trying to win a chip, and they're not doing it the way they're doing it. So the faster you can be honest with yourself about where your franchise is, and if that means you got to turn around and let go of a player that's meant a lot, that's the smart thing to do as an organization. This isn't about loyalty from the team or the player anymore. It's all about business for everybody. So let the player get paid wherever he wants, but let teams have the opportunity to look in the mirror and be like, man, we're out of this championship window with this. We got to change something up. I respect that.
Me too.
In terms of what the Grizzlies did, they draft the most accomplished player in college basketball over the last 2 years, the biggest college basketball player, you know, maybe ever in terms of relative to his production as well. What do you make of that move for the Grizzlies, and do you see his production translating?
Yeah, so I found myself singing I Told You So when he was drafted, and I was watching the Yahoo coverage of it. And, you know, Kristen Peek, who's our draft expert, I've worked with Kristen for months, and she was adamant months ago that he was a second rounder and didn't really want him to be a first rounder, didn't think it felt right. And I stood there on set while she and Danny Green just argued about it. And all I could think about when he was picked is that we talked about it, and Danny was clear that he's the right guy for what they need. So I reached out to three guys that I trust that have good opinions who played in the NBA and asked them all. And all three of them gave me the same answer. If the organization is willing to be patient, you can get meaningful minutes out of Zach Edey. Like, do I think that Zach Edey is going to come in and in the first 6 months of his rookie year make a huge difference to Memphis? No. Do I think by year two or three, when he's had the chance to continue to work on some of the things he needs to work on, can he be a difference maker? Yeah, I think Zach Edey can be a very good player in the NBA. I don't think he's a juggernaut. Oh, my God, we've got the face of the franchise for the next decade. But do they finally have, in my mind, a big man that can step in and compete with big men? Yes. And what are we seeing right now is a trend in the NBA. Like, a couple of years ago, it was everybody spread out and heave up threes, even if that's not what you're good at. Now it's, hey, let's get a balance on the roster. And big men are actually having some success with some teams. So I think that this works. I just think that the key for everybody is to remember that even Wembanyama, the most transcendent talent we've seen in a generation, took 6 months to get right. So I would beg Memphis as an organization and his fans to be a little patient. But I think by year two or year three, Zach Edey is a meaningful part of a deep basketball team that can make a run at that point.
How about Paul George to the Sixers in terms of them or the Knicks and catching and, you know, walking down the Boston Celtics? Who's closer after the Paul George move? And obviously the Knicks make the move to get Bridges.
So here's the funny thing. I think the Knicks are a little closer, but I think Paul George is the bigger star in everybody's mind. But I was working yesterday with Ryan Hollins, and we all know Ryan. Like, I've worked with him ever since ESPN. We were doing a show together on Fox Sports Radio. Yeah. And Ryan was talking a lot about culture. And you know, we have a long history. Ryan's played for a lot of NBA teams. But as we deep dove into culture, what really hit me is, like, you're in one of three stages. You're either the culture builder, all right, or you are a person that can fit right into the culture, or you're the person that can come in and give that culture a little extra piece of what it needs. I think the problem they're going to have in Philadelphia is the identity of the Sixers. Paul George, at this stage in his career, would have to come in and be willing to just be a piece. Just be a puzzle portion, right? And I don't know that that's where Paul George is really going to be the most comfortable. And when things start to go wrong, is Paul George going to defer to what the actual culture is there? Like, so it is identity is what we say all the time in the NFL. I think it's a a smart way to look at some of these signings and say, okay, like the Knicks have established who they are because of the way Tibbs coaches, because of the way they run their offense. You know exactly who they are. You know how they play. You know what style they're going to be. You know the types of players that they're looking for. So they bring in somebody that never misses a minute in the game, that's a workhorse. Like, you can understand the culture fit. I look at Paul George and I say, awesome. If we were playing 2K, you just got an unbelievable team. Maybe the most talented Sixers roster we've seen in a generation. You can look at it and say, heck yeah. But do I believe that they all gel together into one culture, into one great soup that could suddenly take down the Celtics? Nah, I think the Celtics are deeper. The Celtics are better. The Celtics have a better established culture and identity in who they are. Like, this feels like a big name move, and I don't know that big name moves are really the future of the NBA.
Talking to Jason Fitz, joins us every single Monday here on the show. Hey, you're going to switch gears a little bit, Fitz. It's a big night, it feels like, to me, and I'm kind of locked into it, in the Copa America here for U.S. men's national team. They obviously have to win to advance to the knockout stage of the tournament against Uruguay, who, you know, is obviously very good and boasts some of the best players in the world. If the U.S. should fail to do so, and again, Uruguay mostly in, they don't have to win to get in, do you expect changes? Should there be changes at the top for U.S. men's soccer yet again?
So here's the hard part, because you mentioned Uruguay doesn't have to win. But boy, their life gets a lot easier if they do. Uruguay's got something to play for. And I don't care about the red card early on in the last match. That was an inexcusable effort from a USA team that's far better than their opponent. And look, they won the first game 2-0, but that could have easily been 5-6-0, right? Like, we've been doing videos for it. I've been hosting the videos with some of our experts at Yahoo Sports. And every single person I've talked to that covers the sport frequently has said, man, it just looks a little disjointed. Why? Like, the talent is there, right? There are some of the best players in the world and guys that are playing at the highest possible level. When I interviewed Pulisic a couple of weeks ago, one of the things he stressed is that this is a roster full of guys that have played in the EPL, that know what's going on. Like, this team should be farther along. And what the U.S. men's national team has to accept is that anything less than advancing is going to lead to an eye roll, a here we go again, this just can't get over the hump. And it's going to hurt the future of the sport with the World Cup right around the corner. Inexcusable that it went the way it went the other night. I watched it and I was stunned that even a man down, they weren't better capable of taking advantage of their speed and their spacing. And now they take on a Uruguay team that is better than they are, that is more talented than they are, that still has something to play for. I don't have good feels, and that's absolutely an abject disaster. If we go through Copa and there's no U.S. men's national team playing in this thing after tonight, man, it's just going to lead to a fiery conversation of, is soccer bound to always be nationally indifferent as a sport? And I hate that. Like, I hate this because there's such an opportunity for national pride. There's such an opportunity for national dominance, and the athletes are now there. There are kids growing up playing this sport at the highest level here in the States, and the fact that it doesn't translate, you have to make changes at the top because you can't just run it back, go back into the World Cup and get your butt kicked again.
Got to shake something up. All right, tomorrow, I'm curious, Fitzy, are you enough of a Hard Knocks fan? Will you automatically be glued into this new iteration where we're doing the off-season work of the New York Giants? We got the Bears as the main thing, what, come August or whatever it's going to be, but got this Giants off-season one. What, did they do enough in the off-season? You know, Saquon Barkley leaving out of there. That'll be interesting. Will you be tuned in?
You couldn't pay me, and I'm cheap. You couldn't pay me to sit down and watch this thing. Because, like, let's be honest. Hard Knocks should be renamed Soft Knocks. We all learned that when Antonio Brown had all of his issues with my beloved Raiders.
Yeah.
I said this
and
at the time. If I am watching Hard Knocks and the whole world knows that this player is absolutely blowing up in every bad way and you don't even cover it, you've lost all respect you will ever get from me as a show. So until I find out that Hard Knocks is actually covering things with some level of I want to give you insight and not just a fluff piece from the league and the team, it's a waste of my time. And they had the opportunity to truly show two sides of a story, show a very conflicted human and a person that was going through a lot of stuff at the time with a team that was going through a lot of stuff. And they elected to gloss over all of it,
yep.
And they never even apologized for that. So shame on HBO, shame on the NFL, shame on Hard Knocks, and shame on every one of us that ever watches it, because I think we should all just stop watching it until it goes away. And then when somebody figures that out, then maybe they'll rebuild it and not treat their audience like they're all stupid.
No question.
I'm with you for the only reason I'm going to watch this fall is because it's Bears, but I'm with you on the most part that this is not tune-in television for me
anymore.
Not,
you know you're getting what they want you to get.
Yeah.
That's the problem. Like if there was like a big spat, if there's like a big disagreement, or there's any kind of real internal, you know, you're not going to see it. Right. So it feels fake. It feels fake in that way.
Especially like when you see the way the NFL starts to give us insights and glimpses of what the draft rooms are really like, and some of those conversations, there's such a beautiful opportunity for the sport to give people that level of behind-the-scenes footage that I think would definitely turn fans into super fans, right? Like, they could do that, and they choose not to. And we as a society, as sports fans, man, we got to stop supporting fluff that doesn't actually push. Like, there is some level of – I don't care if we're talking about the writers that cover your favorite team or the outlets that cover your favorite team. Like, instead of just looking for those people to affirm that everything's going to be rosy and everything's going to turn out great and your team's going to be great – I want a writer that's going to sit back and say, man, you got problems. I've always said, we all have one friend that's an absolute disaster. That's the friend I want to take to a psychic. And when he walks out of the room, if he's in tears saying, you know what, that psychic told me I'm never going to find love, I'm going to die alone, and I'm going to be poor the rest of my life, I would go see that psychic every week because that person's giving me something real. I'm the same way with my sports coverage. Like, tell me my team stinks and what needs to happen to fix it. But this world we live in where everybody just wants affirmation and praise when teams and players don't always deserve it, I don't understand.
Is that's you in the background on the fiddle in that Shaboozy song, right? Do you have a credit on that song?
I wish. Here's the thing. Like, Shaboozy, hit me up, man. Next time, here's the thing. Like, I never get tired of those big old platinum awards they put on your wall, right? So I would take a platinum. Like, Shaboozy should have called me.
He really should have.
How big is he in the country music scene? Give us the context on it, Fitz.
It's blowing up. I think there's a hesitation, though. And this is real for country. Like, what a lot of people don't understand is that there's a belief in country that you can come in and you can have one hit. You can come in, you can have two hits. Mm. If you look at the guys that are actually, like, headlining, the number of times, and I remember my first show with the band Perry ever, we were on the Tim McGraw tour, and it was Luke Bryan right before Tim McGraw, and we were before Luke. And watching Luke and realizing at the time, I think he'd had 6 records out, like, if you want a headline in country music, it'd be like the superstar up front, for the most part, 90% of the time, you got to be 4, 5, 6 records in. You got to be 12, 13, 14 number ones in. It takes that long to get to the point that you can fill 25,000 seats. That's just the way country music usually works. So what happens on guys like Shaboozy is everybody looks back and says, okay, this is cool. But this is the same thing. Even when FGL had Cruz come out, it was like, all right, can they do it again? Can they do it again? Can they do it again? Like, that's the way the world works. So, like, this Shaboozy moment is huge, and everybody loves it. But, man, you do have to see some sustainability. Like, is this something that we can actually build around and make money off of as an industry, or is this just a flash in the pan? I hope it sticks around because I think it's catchy as hell.
Yeah. Hey, Fitz, you're the best, man. Appreciate the time, as always.
Appreciate you, boys. Have a great week.
Yes, sir. He is Jason Fitz. Joins us every Monday here on the show. just your style, man. Right up your alley.
It kind of he says catchy.
Yeah.
Kind of gets you.
Well, yeah, it definitely is catchy for sure.
And you can do your old stomp to it.
Yeah.
And then what's the do-si-do?
That's right. Do a little square now. Man, I tell you, we had a big old time, man. Thanks, Spooky. Tell you what, man.
They get that, they're playing this on FM 100?
Yeah.
Banging it on the wolf.
Banging it on the wolf.
Yeah. Why the hell I work so hard, man? These 40 hours, man, they're killing me, man. 9 to 5, man. Hey.
I played basketball against Jaquan once over in West Memphis, believe it or not, at a charity tournament. Our buddy Greg Motley. Greg Motley, local guy here in town, puts these charity basketball hoops things about 15 years ago. Jaquan in that joint playing basketball in West Memphis.
Well, I think he's getting paid again off this.
Yeah, this royalties out the butt.
If he's smart, he should be getting some royalties.
Congrats, Jaquan.
Jaquan getting it.
Hey, if you get over to Shoe 360, everybody in the gym will get better. That's the truth of it. They got technology that the best of the best use when it comes to passing, dribbling, shooting drills. You put the reps in, you're going to see the results. It's a simple math equation, right? Work in, results out. I've never met somebody that hasn't put the work in and didn't get better at whatever it is they're doing. So you can do that here at Shoot 360. If you've got a Hooper in the house, take them out there, 85 Mark Center Drive in Cairo, and let them see and feel that technology for themselves.
Yeah, I like the way John put it. You just bring the passion. You bring the passionate young Hooper, whether it's your son, daughter, niece, nephew, great membership opportunity if you're an uncle or an aunt. Get your niece or nephew a membership out to Shoot 360. They're going to absolutely love it. They're going to be getting better. And they've got the old school mixed with the new school, the NASA-level technology, but the old school, too, with the development coaches, the weight training. They've got it all out at Shoot 360. You need to get your place in line for the new spot out in Cordova by getting to 85 Market Center Drive in Collierville right now. Still all loaded up out there and ready to go until we get the big place opened up. It's Shoot 360, the future of basketball training. Again, go see them at 85 Market Center Drive in Collierville.
Jason and John, I turn FM, ESPN. Apparently, the Klay Thompson deal not quite done yet.
Okay.
Chris Haynes says that, that Golden State's still working through details, and a deal is not close at this point. That was at 142.
Dallas is still working through details?
Yeah.
Or Golden State?
Golden State.
Okay.
Golden State. So that was at 142. He initially reported it, and then he came back and said Golden State is working through details. And I'm told a deal is not close, even though Klay Thompson has reached an agreement. He reported previously that Klay Thompson has reached the agreement. So, I don't know. I don't know what's going on there.
Okay.
Are you going to be okay?
Yeah. So, yeah, okay. I was confused.
Yeah, he said at first that they had agreed to a sign and trade.
That's the difference here.
A few minutes later and said, wait,
okay,
a deal is not close.
Well, those can get confusing.
Very confusing.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you don't like the, you know, what's coming back or going out. I don't know.
Ultimately a net gain, Derrick Jones going out, Klay coming in, right? Ultimately a marginal gain there.
Yeah, because they didn't have enough. Like, they didn't have enough outside of Kyrie and Luka, right?
They
just didn't have, I mean, Derrick Jones
couldn't do that. He can knock down a corner three, but he
maybe,
wasn't about to.
Yeah, I mean, that was all he could, you know, and then occasionally, like, transition dunks and stuff. But, you know, Klay is actually a
knockdown out there.
You have to deal with Klay out there,
yeah,
right?
Well, so, if he's wide open in the corners, it's knocked down all day long.
They didn't have
that. You're not hoping he does like Derrick and PJ.
Yeah, they had Klay against the Celtics. You just never know, right? I mean, if he was the good version. I don't know if, you know, the last, most recent version, but if he's good.
I mean, I was looking, he still averaged, what, 17 points last year?
Yeah, I mean, he was
18 points, really, last year.
Yeah.
And he still shot at 39% from three, even though for him that's low.
Yeah.
It's an upgrade from Derrick Jones.
It's an upgrade for sure. Not defensively. But right. It's not like they were, you know, I guess they were
after the trade deadline.
But that was more because of Lively and Gafford, really, more than anything.
PJ helped, too.
But Derrick definitely was a part of it. So they're changing their team a little bit, you know. They think their ceiling's higher with Klay than Derrick.
Yeah.
We shall see. That's going to do it for us today. Thanks to Jason Fitz for joining us on the show. Jeffrey and Company up next. Don't miss it. For Jason, I'm John. We're gone. Jason and John, I turn up him, ESPN. Apparently, the Klay Thompson deal not quite done yet.
Okay.
Chris Haynes says that, that Golden State's still working through details, and a deal is not close at this point. That was at 142.
Dallas is still working through details?
Yeah.
Or Golden State?
Golden State.
Okay.
Golden State. So that was at 142. He initially reported it, and then he came back and said Golden State is working through details, and I'm told a deal is not close, even though Klay Thompson has reached an agreement. He reported previously that Klay Thompson has reached the agreement. So I don't know. I don't know what's going on there.
Okay.
Are you going to be okay?
Yeah, so, yeah, okay. I was confused.
Yeah, he said at first that they had agreed to a
sign and trade. That's the difference here.
A few minutes later and said, wait,
okay,
a deal is not close.
Well, those can get confusing.
Very confusing.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you don't like the, you know, what's coming back or going out. I don't know.
Ultimately a net gain, Derrick Jones going out, Klay coming in, right? Ultimately a marginal gain there.
Yeah, because they didn't have enough. Like, they didn't have enough outside of Kyrie and Luka, right? They just didn't have. I mean, Derrick Jones.
And Jones couldn't do that. He can knock down a corner three, but he
maybe,
wasn't about to.
Yeah, I mean, that was all he could, you know. And then occasionally, like, transition dunks and stuff. But, you know, Klay is actually
knockdown out there.
You have to deal with Klay out there,
yeah,
right?
Well, so, if he's wide open in the corners, it's knocked down all day long.
They didn't have
that.
You're
not hoping he does like Derrick and PJ.
Yeah, they had Klay against the Celtics. You just never know, right? I mean, if he was the good version. I don't know if, you know, the last, most recent version. But if he's good.
I mean, I was looking, he still averaged, what, 17 points last year?
Yeah, I mean, he was
18 points, really, last year.
Yeah.
And he still shot at 39% from three, even though for him that's low.
Yeah.
It's an upgrade from Derrick Jones.
It's an upgrade for sure. Not defensively. But it's not like they were, I guess they were
They were after the trade deadline.
But that was more because of Lively and Gafford, really, more than anything.
PJ helped too.
But Derrick definitely was a part of it. So they're changing their team a little bit, you know. They think their ceiling's higher with Clay than Derrick. We shall see. Good to do it for us today. Thanks to Jason Fitz for joining us on the show. Jeffrey and Company up next. Don't miss it. For Jason, I'm John. We're gone.